Hello and welcome to the show today. We have a special guest today. We have a leader from the commercial banking sector who's involved in community investment. So we're going to be talking about the importance of investing, investment policy, and probably a few other things, the commercial lending policy that affects us all, federal policy. And before we go any further, I will let her introduce herself right now.
Hi, I'm Laura. I work for a big bank. I won't tell you which one.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
It's a good one.
Can you just, on a very high level, can you tell us why we should care about lending policy or investment policy from these big banks?
Why we should care? I think in our economic system, banks are not the only source of capital by any means, but they control trillions and trillions of dollars of capital, and how they decide where that capital ends up affects all of us. But for those who can't access it at all, it detrimentally affects them and creates a gap in wealth, in income, in opportunity. And so what do we expect from an organization that should be a trusted, I think, you know, when banks were originated, they were a trusted function, tool in society. And as time has gone on with a focus on profitability, is it possible to trust banks to make investments, to make decisions, to offer products? You know, we put a lot of tools in place to try to keep them from going too far outside of bounds, but are they actively making products that will reduce the racial wealth divide, reduce income disparities, reduce lack of opportunity, and hopefully change some of the economic disparities that have been created over centuries in this country? And are they doing that? Or are they making it worse? And that could be the more insidious factor.
I think you have kind of jumped to the meat of the conversation in
the
introduction.
All the questions.
Right. Well, you didn't answer them, but let's put the brakes on the train for a second. And let's start with, I guess, kind of overall policy, federal government, big banks. What's the relationship? How do they all work together?
Big banks are public companies or shareholder-driven, whether it's a publicly traded company or a closely held company. It is the purpose of most commercial banks in this country at this time is to provide the banking system to function the banking system, but to produce profitability through that. And so you do that by lending money or investing money for a return, but getting those dollars back is always the utmost concern. So is the policy of a bank one that only offers credit, whether debt or equity or whatever it may be, to those that can easily access it and perhaps from the highest level don't actually need it, but it's a business transaction all around that enriches everyone involved? Or are banks offering those products and services to everyone equally? And I think that's where policy comes into play. And, you know, I think any prudent lender or investor will vet the qualities of the people and organizations to which they're offering dollars to confirm that they can be repaid. But what types of biased decisions get made or biased assumptions get made about certain people, certain places, And does it equate to a system that is supportive? And again, we haven't talked a lot about this, but our goal and our stated goal is within my subsidiary of this organization is to reduce the racial wealth divide. So addressing those disparities is important to us, and are the products that this financial institution offers across the board doing that, or is it actually exacerbating it by offering opportunity to those that don't actually need it, but it enriches them because they can access it where someone else who maybe needs it cannot.
All right, so I guess I want to go back in time a little bit. So I think a lot of people might be familiar with the whole redlining term. You know, since blacks were freed, different areas where minorities lived were literally redlined on different maps. And if you were in an area that had a red line around it, lending was difficult, borrowing was difficult, getting a mortgage was difficult from a bank. So in 1977, the Community Reinvestment Act was enacted, which requires the Federal Reserve and federal banks and federal financial institutions to encourage financial activity within all communities, no matter what the income level. It should have helped to resolve the redlining issue and get money flowing into these minority areas. So I think that's a very high level background of kind of what we're talking about. So you're involved with today, 2019, ensuring that the effects of the Reinvestment Act are still being pushed forward in a positive direction. Is that a fair statement?
That is secondary to the job of increasing the profitability of the bank and its shareholders.
Of course. That's always priority one for, you know, in free
enterprise.
That's a big
difference.
Oh, definitely. I agree.
I will say, though, there are some financial institutions that either have significant CRA requirements that just honestly can't be met through super profitable investment opportunities that are created through federal and state programs, or there's all types of ways to get that CRA credit. And so there are some organizations who actually need that credit, whether it's for just because of the CRA demand in a certain area, or because of reputational risk. You've heard about banks who get in trouble for doing terrible things. And so they'll invest a lot of money to kind of try to change the public perception of their reputation. So our biggest driver is profitability. There are some that will actually invest specifically for something other than profitability, but ultimately it's a driver to get back to profitability, which is a high or excellent CRA rating, or changing public perception after a negative event.
Right, and that kind of leads me back to maybe a week ago, we were chatting about Band-Aids versus cures. And this sounds like a good segue into that conversation. We were kind of chatting about whether a commercial enterprise that's doing good is really and truly a positive entity if they're fixing a problem, whether they're just putting a Band-Aid on the problem or if they're actually trying to cure the problem. So in the investment community, Community Reinvestment Act, how do we determine Well, how do we know if this organization is just trying to put band-aids on things to keep the money flowing, or if they're actually trying to cure the problem and make true equity in the system?
So I'm going to go back and define what equity means in my world, not investment equity, but what we call racial equity, which is that your outcomes are not determined by your race or your census tract. So where you were born and what your race is, the outcomes of your life, your health outcomes, your educational outcomes, your financial outcomes are not predetermined by where you live and what color you are. That is racial equity as it's defined in the conversations that I have regularly. There are no financial there are very few financial institutions for whom that is their stated goal, is to change that dynamic. There aren't a lot of institutions anywhere that have that stated goal, but there are some. Within hours, we have taken on the mantle specifically of racial equity and are trying within a very large bank to change the way investment decisions get made, resources are allocated, but we're all doing it within the tools and framework that have been established over decades and more likely centuries that have supported a institutionalized racist system that has systematically sent resources to the white population and taken resources from people of color. It is a zero-sum game in that system, and every system, I think you can look at every large system within the United States and see historical evidence of intention to divert resources from one group towards another. So how do you change that dynamic, and how do you do it within the context of a larger system that already exists and that everyone supports?
Well, I mean, I kind of have to go all the way back to the definition. So what you defined to me sounded more like equality at a point in time versus equity in a system, right? If we want to have an outcome where your race or your location is irrelevant, that's equality. Equity to me is bringing you up from where you are so that you can accomplish equality. Because if you say, okay, today we're going to make everybody equal, everybody plays by the same rules, that's not going to account for the fact that I'm 50 yards behind you.
I'm not saying we're just going to let everybody play by the same rules. That's the fake stuff we've been doing for the last 100 years or how many ever years we've been doing, decades, right? Saying separate but equal, I know that's an older version of that concept, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying equity is that those outcomes are not determined. So it's not that you have the same chance. It is that so maybe what I need is a further definition of how you change that. The centuries and decades of systemic movement of resources and wealth and opportunity from one population to another cannot be reversed by saying, well, we'll just lend to Black people and white people equally. It has to be reversed by intentional action to give opportunity to people of color differently than the white population that has already been given all of those gifts for decades and centuries. Is that fair? Does that help?
That's okay. We're on the same page now. We're closer to it. Yeah. So, this comes to mind as far as investment goes. And I know we spoke earlier about the difference between lending and investment. So you mentioned that there are certain organizations that might be involved with more or less rather profitability and might be more into the social side of investment. What does that mean exactly? Are these institutions lending money to minorities, or are they lending money to traditional investors who want to develop in lower income areas? Like, what does that mean? What does it mean to want to invest in a more positive, less profit-driven manner?
So there are financial institutions that are not defined the same as regulated banks or credit unions or the kind of standard commercial financial institutions that you know, the big names. The majority of these organizations are nonprofit. Not all of them are. I don't know that that actually matters. And they are regulated differently, but also by the federal government. And usually they state an intention to invest in certain types of projects or in certain geographies or, and really what I think those organizations do differently than a commercial bank is they take capital that they receive from wherever they can raise it and deploy it through usually debt products, but debt and equity products for a return that may or may not be as low or as high as a traditional financial institution. And they invest in the resources to provide technical assistance for the borrower so that they reduce the likelihood of default in those investments. So what I will say is they increase their return. So if they lose more dollars, the return overall has been increased. So you can look at these organizations and see their default rates are actually lower, but they're charging a higher spread on their dollars, the higher rate on their dollars, but they're also at the same time providing technical assistance and support to the borrower so that the likelihood of default, maybe they have, instead of a project goes into default, can't pay its interest rate, you know, its payments, and a commercial bank after 90 days says, that's it, you're in foreclosure, start moving through that process, where these types of organizations may wait 9 months or a year or whatever it may be. So they'll charge more, they'll extend credit to slightly riskier borrowers, and then they will provide those borrowers with support.
So where does like an organization like NACA fit in there? Because
who?
NACA, you not heard of NACA?
I don't know that one.
NACA is, I'm pretty sure they're nonprofit, but they get people, prospective homeowners, into these programs where they basically send you to training. You take classes on how to be a good homeowner and how to be financially responsible. And they pretty much take you from A to Z on how to clean up your credit, how to get your finances in order. And once you're at a point where they feel you're on a road to success, they will write you a loan to purchase a home. And
so
that's basically in a boot camp for like a year or two to make sure you keep the home
right
together. But as far as I know, I think they're completely nonprofit, so I don't think they're profit driven, you know, so.
But what's profit? I mean, nonprofits still are looking to
cover their expenses.
Cover their expenses, salaries, and yeah, make enough money to grow their programs and to pay their staff.
True.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that's what I'm talking about. So it's that kind of assistance. I think the question becomes, to whom does that assistance go? And has it had any effect on this centuries-old institutionalized diversion of resources from one race to another? And mostly the answer is no, or how do we know? Because we don't actually track and test that kind of data. Like, we don't know.
You're on a national level, like your organization's a nationwide. And being that most Black-owned banks or minority, even Latino-owned banks, typically are regional or even just in one city or a couple of counties, does that have a major impact? I know, you know, I lived in Atlanta, I lived in Birmingham, I lived in Florida. And Birmingham and Atlanta definitely had a Black banking culture. There were, you could go find several Black banks, get loans and things of that nature. And they generally had a reputation for lending more money to people that couldn't go to Wells Fargo or Bank of America or something like that.